This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
All righty, 9:38 in the morning on a Wednesday, and you know it's that time to bring out those whips. Come on, crack that whip, crack that whip. Ouch, and scream away. Yeah, it is time now for the S&M show. I'm David Chiu with Julian Ng and also Botak, as he's, fondly called over here, Gu Su Chuang. Plus also somebody else who's far, far away. In fact, if you listen very closely, you will be able to hear him. Seriously, listen, listen. Ooh, you hear that? You hear that? I don't know.
Good morning.
Good morning, Australian stockman. How are you doing, huh? Dying.
He gets himself up under one end.
How are you doing, Dali?
Very good, very good.
Salvatore Dali, and the land down under is where he's at right now. Yeah?
Hello.
Yeah. Okay, Chuang, what do you got to say about that?
Well, we've got lots of stuff to discuss with you today. And it's not because you're in Australia that we're asking you about China, Lawrence.
Doing research.
Oh, okay. Sounds very ominous. Hmm?
Well, one of the biggest news was the capital controls relaxation for the Shanghai Free Trade Zone. I'm not sure whether you guys have discussed this for the last few days, but it is a very, very major development.
Hmm. Yeah, we did actually cover it some time back, but that was a time when there wasn't a lot of details out on that.
But I think over the weekend, China did announce more details, and it also saw the share market fly a little bit over there on Monday as well, isn't it?
Yes, well, it's going to, the ramifications are so huge, especially to other Asian cities that are actually, you know, beneficiaries of this freer access and flow of capital. You just imagine what we have been seeing in terms of, say, the buying of Singapore property. Australian houses, Canadian houses, American houses are, you know, the very, very, how should I say, connected, and they somehow managed to squirrel their way, you know, bypassing the capital controls, because technically an individual can only exchange 50,000 US worth of foreign currency a year. So, you know, those people, those Chinese nationals that are actually, you know, can actually, you know, move their money out are just a trickle of what we have been seeing for the last few years. With this new relaxation, you're going to get an enormous amount of outflow into, say, even in Skanda properties. You know, they don't have to hide anymore.
Dali, the Australian Financial Review talked about how the Australian companies and assets will be receiving a huge boost from this. What do you reckon?
It is. I mean, it's just going to probably boost demand for good properties. That's one. The second part is that it's going to allow a lot more China companies to raise money in yuan. You know, they can start issuing yuan, because a lot of international investors want to be long on the yuan, but there are actually very few bonds that are available, or even deposits. You know, you need to circumvent a lot of controls. But with this, you can actually, you know, buy yuan-denominated corporate bonds. So it's going to be a huge development over the next few years.
And I'm also wondering, because we all know that China is holding one of the biggest foreign exchange reserves in the world. They hold a great chunk of treasury bond yield, treasury bonds as well. And they have actually in the past been accused of being a currency manipulator by virtue of their foreign currency holdings. So this would actually relieve some of the pressure of that, right? Because they can then go back to holding yuan as well and allowing some of these either locals
it's
or...
Exactly, yeah. A very, very good point, because, you know, technically they can't be seen to be... I mean, I think they're throwing their arms in the air with the amount of QE that is happening, you know, but they're still forced to hold T bonds and euro bonds, you know. But in this way, they are basically relaxing, allowing for much more gradual, they don't have to hold so much US papers, so to speak. I mean, they've shifted the burden to probably the state companies, the individuals, you know, and they're all going to benefit from it. And we are actually going to benefit from it.
Dali, when we read this in the context of the third plenum held by the Chinese Communist Party recently, just, you know, the capital market reform was just one of three. But this clearly has huge ramifications because this sounds as if it's one of the early salvos fired at making the yuan, or in fact, you know, enabling the yuan to be the next global reserve currency, supplanting the US dollar. Definitely. Could this be one of it?
Very, very important. I was shocked that they would actually, I thought there would be just a lot of talk, you know. But this is actually very swift, very quick. I mean, already you have about 1,600 companies set up in Shanghai Free Trade Zone and another 6,000 as we spoke, you know, just registering their companies. And we're talking about foreign banks, you know, foreign companies and local companies and so on and so forth. So to take advantage of this situation.
You know, one of the things
that time.
Yeah, one of the things the Chinese government has wanted to do with its people is to loosen their purse strings and to get them to spend some of their savings. And China's a huge savings culture, but even if a trickle of that were to come into the free trade zone, you know, as you suggest, it's going to be massive and it's going to keep prices of assets all around its neighboring countries and its clients, customers, are buoyant for years to come. Do you think that's going to happen?
It is one way, because they have had so much problem trying to rein in their local property prices. Because when you put in all these controls, you know, you say, okay, you know, you can only play in this playground, and then yet you're not happy with the rising property prices. So this is one huge way of releasing this so-called liquidity out onto the rest of the world, instead of, you know, pumping up the local property prices a lot more. This is like a release valve for them.
Wow, that's in a way that's scary as well, because it means that
it is very scary. It's actually what they're doing is that they're exporting liquidity.
So
So
I think that the country that would be most affected and insecure about this would probably be Hong Kong, right? Because if you look at how different financial centers in the region are kind of positioning themselves, you have Singapore, which is kind of like the REITs and business trust center, right? And then you have KL. I'm sure KL is not like way up there in the leagues of Singapore and Hong Kong, but KL is really establishing its name as the Islamic banking center, as well as, you know, we have leadership in the palm oil sector as well. But Hong Kong used to be the gateway to China, and now China itself doesn't need a gateway. What do you think would happen with Hong Kong?
Yeah, this is actually a smack in the face for Hong Kong. There's no need for so much of the bigger red chips to, like, you know, go through Hong Kong anymore. You know, the legitimacy route has been, you know, extended. So, in fact, the smaller places, say like Malaysia, is going to be a huge beneficiary, especially with Iskandar, which is, you know, one of the theme places. And now it's like you have a new array of investors with, you know, they don't have to circumvent anything, and then they can park their money anywhere. The other bigger beneficiary would be the Australian economy, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, the Australian press has been all agog with this news. I mean, for example, the AFR, the Aussie Financial Review, talking about much of this money making its way towards Australia. You know, ANZ's chief China economist Liu Ligang saying that this free trade zone, of course, not subject to capital controls. There's over a million millionaires in China, and they've all been constricted by this $50,000 rule. And you know, lots of stuff in terms of carrying briefcases of cash across to Macau, trading companies abroad, buying properties via, you know, even the country gardens structure. So It's a bit scary in a way, because already prices are so inflated, and it looks as if prices are going to be inflated even more.
Yeah, but I mean, just imagine as an example. Now, I mean, all our companies developing, say, in Iskandar, can legitimately, you know, fly and set up a huge sales office in Shanghai Free Trade Zone. You know, it's mind-boggling to think of what could happen. You're talking about a million millionaires in US dollars in China alone. So, you know, it's a big deal.
And so just like any other dam that has opened its flood gates, we'll just have to wait and see what happens, yeah, and who actually gets flooded along the way. When we come back, we've got Not the Lex column. Stay for that. This is the S&M Show.
Bring forth money. BFM 89.9.
Alrighty, we're back with the Ouch S&M Show every Wednesday from 9:30 to 10. We've got Dali on the line, who's all the way down under at the moment, and he joins us on the line at the moment. Okay, Not the Lex column is what we're looking at next, aren't we? Yeah. Hey.
Yeah, I want to talk about. Yeah, you guys must have trashed this to death. You know, the Ken One ETF and Tianju. What's your guy? What do you guys think?
Well, I'm very, very intrigued by the fact that the Can One's CEO, he quit a few days before that, and then after he quit, then he joined in the private firm, made a bid for Kenju. You know, I'm not sure if any conflicts have surfaced as a result of that move. I think it's quite conflicting, don't you think?
It is conflicting, but that aside, I think it is a. It's very depressing because the attraction of Ken One, you know, with the scoop of controlling Kenju, and now you're almost like having to realize the gains, because it is a decent bid for cash, you know, for Kenju, but it also takes away from the for people who have jumped into Ken One thinking that, you know, it's going to benefit from like huge dividends and later on maybe taking Kenju 100% private into Ken One itself.
The Edge, right? Cut in on that. The Edge actually came up with a little article, a commentary actually. It's asking why should the EPF join together with the private company to make the general offer. Why can't, number one, EPF go it alone? And number two, why was there that resignation subsequent to that joint hands with EPF to take over the company? A lot of questions have been raised, actually.
Right. I mean, I can side with EPF there because they needed somebody to drive the ship. So you need somebody. It's just like SP City needed, you know, Tan Sri Liu. You need somebody to take it private. You know, you can't appoint somebody from EPF to go and run the thing. So you need somebody who's able to drive the ship. But having said that, the interesting thing for me is that since Ken One controls Kenju, we are not certain whether Ken One will accept the offer.
Yeah, that makes it so much more interesting, right? Because then you end up with a tussle. And the thing about EPF is that they are an investor, but they're getting their hands, again, dirty right now with management of business. And that's clearly not their domain. And they're going into another investment venture after the RHB thing, right?
Yeah. If I was advising shareholders of Ken One, and maybe I would say don't take up the offer. You know, it's ridiculous because the value of having Kenju is enormous. And if Ken One board decides to take up the offer, all you get is just a one-off thing. And then what's next? You know, soon you're going to find that EPF and the XMD, you know, a year down the road, going to list this thing back on KLSD again at $5 a share.
Yeah. That seems to be the trend. Yeah. So what else have...
One more thing, you know, Ken One shareholders should not accept.
Okay.
So it's a good offer. Yeah.
Okay. And what else have you got for us?
Actually, nothing much. Not the Lex column is basically we look at, you know, what's the whisperers around the broken community. I think Baraka has had a fantastic run, and the word around the rumor mill is that this is just a start, and in fact they are going to be probably the major player in pipelines, projects and contracts from Petronas. So apparently, despite the huge run-up, there might be even more upside for Baraka. In the months ahead.
Apparently, right?
apparently.
It could either be upside or downside. It's either way. That's not saying much.
Then you're saying nothing.
No, exactly.
Because if it doesn't go up, we go down.
The other interesting thing is the withdrawal of Toto from listing.
Yes.
The business trust.
As a trust. It's very weird because the board approved it at first and then shareholders approved it and, you know, everything seems to be all systems go and then they pull it and then you cite or reduce investors' interest. I'm not sure whether it's because of the Malaysian
elections.
No, the Malaysian thingy with the Asia Sun Bloom on, you know, debacle.
There were some people.
They don't see another Malaysian linked company there for the time being, or what?
There was talk about it being Vincent Tan's way of hedging against the elections, remember? That came out as well.
I think that is more. When he probably mooted the idea, it was probably like a hedge bet in case the election did not turn out.
Right.
In a certain way. Now that point is moot, I guess.
Correct.
So, but the great thing is that actually the trust is actually very, very good because technically speaking, you can only distribute the total profits as dividends. But with the trust thing, you can actually distribute even the cash flow portion, which would have meant that the company would have been able to declare even bigger dividends. You know, I think the authorities might be balking at the fact that, you know, this is one way of, like, you know, transferring funds out of
the country. Okay, it's almost time to end right now. But this week you've got a song for us from John Farnham.
Yeah, but since I'm down in Sydney, so I have to pick it on Aussie.
And you got this song that's called?
Yeah. Can you translate into Malay?
not quite, but I think so. It's called Baka Untuk Anda, Burn for You.
I burn for you.
Thanks so much.
See you next week, mate.
All right, next week when you come back, yeah? And so, if you want to hear more of Dali, don't forget to join us every Wednesday, 9:30 to 10 o'clock, for the S&M show. Also, you'll be able to catch hold of Dali as well at his website. It's malaysiafinance.blogspot.com. Leaving you with this one from John Farnham. Burn for you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.